Every Woman is a womanist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated. And I am Amy Bell, and I'm here with Sharon Lockhart and Carol
Conway.
And we are going to have a rather lively conversation today that we would encourage you to join by calling 816-931-5534. And we're going to start it off with a little introduction from The Age of American Unreason by Susan Jacoby. If books are first mighty and an indispensable pillar of intellectual life, conversation is the second. In many respects, the mass media have been responsible for an even more formidable assault on conversation than on literature during the past 40 years. Conversation took its first heavy hit in the 50s when many families began turning on the television set while eating dinner. This practice was forbidden by my mother but permitted in many homes, and the lure of the black and white screen was so strong that I always looked forward to sleepovers at the homes of friends whose parents took a more permissive attitude about watching television during meals. Television programs did not end conversation, but they changed its nature. While watching a favorite program, we were likely to talk about what was happening on the screen rather than what was going on in our lives. The past two decades, by contrast, have produced an explosion of what are called conversation avoidance devices.
Well, Carol?
Well, I don't think that you can have a good society, a good neighborhood, a good workplace, unless you know and care about the people that you come into contact with. And I think that there is a disjoint, something that there is wrong in our culture that is not kind, is not enthusiastic, except maybe sports. And that isn't really very nice or very comfortable.
You're talking about the divide in our politics, in our thinking.
No. Yeah, well, yes, but also everything else. I don't think that people become ruder on one topic and not others. I think if we get to snarling and snapping, a lot like dogs, you know, how they go, they chomp, chomp, chomp. I think that we are becoming mean, just plain old-fashioned mean. I walked into a bookstore not too long ago, and there were two stacks of books right in front of the front door. And one of them said, the title of one was, How to Talk to a Liberal. And the other one was How to Talk to a Conservative. And there were a couple standing ahead of me about 3 feet and maybe a little bit older than I am. And I stopped and I looked at the books and I looked at the couple, and a piece of me said, ask them if they will have a cup of coffee with you and talk about this. But I wimped out. I didn't. And I wish I had.
Because you knew from what they said that they were conservative.
Yeah. He said, am I allowed to say
no?
Well?
No, you're not.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. Said a nasty word about anybody who would read that kind of a book. And I'm standing there.
Or want to talk to a liberal.
A liberal.
Liberal. Yeah. And, you know, I have wished, that was probably 5 years ago, And I still wish every time I walk in Barnes and Noble that I had said, okay, I'll treat. I buy coffee. Let's give this a fly. Let's see if we can talk and be nice to each other.
Well,
I don't know what
would happen. And the thing is that I think sometimes when I hear you say that, does that mean you have to talk about the weather to be able to be nice to each other?
Oh, no. Oh, no. You have to talk about important things.
That
not
seems to be
necessarily politics, however people define that anymore. I'm not too sure. Maybe just have a cup of coffee and say, where do you live? I don't know. I didn't do it, so I can't really say
My concern is, why should we be avoiding political conversations with each other?
That's exactly it. We shouldn't be.
We've been raised, and I know that even you read, maybe it's Emily Post's fault, because you read a book on manners, and it says that you should never have conversation that involves politics. And when
or religion.
Or religion.
Mm-hmm.
And like, when you read a book like, say, Anna Karenina, I read that one recently, a lot of that book out of the 19th century that was just kind of the mundane, everyday life of these people, they were getting together and talking about politics and religion and everything. And they would talk about how, well, this person is one of those newfangled liberals and this and that and the other, and maybe they'd kind of be distasteful about that, but they'd still come together and talk about it. And in other books that you read out of the 19th century, that same thing happens. These parties happen, and people get together, and they talk politics. And Emily Post came out...
in the 40s, probably?
No, I think it was earlier than that. And it, this idea that you're not allowed to talk about politics, it just seems fairly new. And people used
in
to
the
know
whole
how
scheme of
to
things.
Talk
yeah.
about things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I had a Republican father and a Democratic mother.
It was the 40s, by the way.
And, you know, and I'll tell you what, come November, not every year, but every other year, things got a little testy in my family. And it finally ended when one year my mother got up in the middle of the night and sewed all his jockey shorts legs together. And he didn't get to the polling place in time to cast his vote and then go another generation. And I can remember going home and yelling and hollering and carrying on about being an anti-war person. And my dad looked at me and he said, well, you think this, 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 and this. And he was saying, you know, about war. And finally, he said to me, where did you get these ideas? And I looked at him and I said, I'm quoting you. And he said, oh, yeah. And somewhere in there, the daughter, I don't know exactly how to explain it. He didn't favor war in any way. And yet he was he served in the army, and...
Well, that would be enough to convince you that war is no good.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, when you have people come back in bad shape. But he had become a businessman. He was doing all these things, and all of a sudden he's got this girl marching around with... placards, and he's not quite sure that that is exactly what he meant, but then he decided, yeah, it was, you know. He didn't want any more kids to go over there.
So were you demonstrating during Vietnam against
oh, yeah.
the war?
Yes.
So I was myself, you of course, Amy, were not born. It's so disgusting to find out the year you were born. I'm just can't even believe.
It was a good year. I don't understand.
Let's see, was that the year my daughter graduated from high school? I believe it was. Yeah, that's true. I've lost my train of thought here. Hello, my train of thought. Where did it go?
Protesting Vietnam.
Protesting Vietnam, yes. She's also an early feminist. When did you become a feminist, Carol?
When I turned 12, my mother told me that I was now going to have to wear a crinoline under the dress she had bought me for the teas that we would be serving together at Democratic Party.
You were supposed to wear a what?
What?
You were supposed to wear a what?
Crinoline. A crinoline. Those scratchy things that made your dress stick out.
Your what?
It made your dress stick out.
Petticoat. Yeah, they were made out. The fabric was crinoline, and you starched it up, too, remember? Because you wanted your dress
and
to stand out straight.
Stuck out. And when you walked, they were just nasty.
And you'd wear, like, three or four of them at least.
Yeah. And I was tall, and, you know. And then, but, same year, year 12, my Aunt Mary came for a stay. And she was a card-carrying communist. And she gave me the ordered three or four Marxist magazines. My name on them, I'm 12, at the mailbox at my house. So, and they all came at once, probably just one publisher up in Canada someplace. And so my mom picked them up, set them on the table. My dad came home, looked at them, and said, I would have given anything to see the look on the mailman's face. End of story.
And you were,
he said,
that was
read them.
South Dakota is where you grew up?
Iowa,
okay.
And never, ever did he say, there's anything wrong with that, don't read that. Make up your own mind. He just said, there you go. Be sure you send a thank you letter to Aunt Mary.
But at your age 12, the word feminist had not yet been coined, had it?
I don't remember it. I think the word was probably in the vocabulary someplace, but it wasn't a movement type of work. I don't think.
Because
could be.
The second wave, the first wave were the women who fought for 75 years like hell to get women the right to vote.
Right.
That was considered the first wave of feminism.
I thought the first wave was with the Mary Wollstonecraft crowd 100 years before that, talking about getting women in school.
I thought she was in the same 40s, 50s era.
I thought she was in the early.
Oh, well, see if you can find that. We've got our trusty computer here.
Yeah. And I think, though, that the ones who
she died in 1797.
Well,
okay.
By golly.
Yeah.
Giving birth to Mary Shelley.
Who wrote
Frankenstein.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
She paved the way for education for women. So.
Yeah.
And you say that was the first wave?
Generally speaking, in feminist history, she's a lot of times credited with being kind of the foremother of feminist thought.
Yeah.
In saying that women should get an education. And
I think the first wave started with 1848, when they had the...
Or what has been... Yeah, she may have been the foremother.
She's usually the foremother.
Yeah.
And then the big hoopla started with Susan B. Anthony and...
Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and that went up through 1920.
But you had
actually
some feminist leadings with Abigail Adams. I mean,
I think
one of the problems, what I'm hearing here, I mean, I'm a history nerd. That's what I do. I think one of the problems in this conversation is that we don't give women credit for having done anything until Susan B. Anthony.
Well,
that's the first time we hear about a woman other than Joan of Arc and Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah, I think
anything.
That
what about the woman who sewed the American flag? What was her name? Betsy Ross.
Betsy Ross, yeah. And, you know.
Well, I think that, you know, until fairly recently, women just were not included very much. You know, if you go back to our first war...
And included very much in what?
Anything.
Well, but they were doing things. Women have been doing things from the beginning of time.
But men write the history.
Until recently, that has been true. And furthermore, there was that old saying that a proper woman should only have her name in the newspaper twice, once when she got married and once when she died.
That's a pleasant thought.
Yeah.
Well, it was clear.
I thought a birth announcement would be in there, surely,
I
too.
I don't know.
But the woman's birth isn't considered, even today. When a woman has a child, if she has a boy, the rockets go off. But little girl babies, not so much excitement. In fact, sometimes if they're the firstborn, it's real disappointment because it should have been a boy.
But you have to remember that in 1848, there were a great many mill women, young women, single, who came to that event, far more than were anticipated. And I never really thought about, well, how come they did come? It's odd what history does to you. You ask some questions and you ask other questions, and about 2 years ago, I finally found out why they came, because they were gearing up for the Mexican War, and they needed the women to work overtime to make the uniforms, and the women wanted a raise. They were making a penny a day.
What year was that?
In the 1840s.
Wow. Hmm. Have you found out anything over there, Amy, to enlighten us a wee bit?
Well, I just, one of the examples that, and my biggest problem is I can't pronounce any of these names and don't really want to make a fool of myself doing it, but how many female Italian Renaissance painters there were, and can you name one? But
no.
If you went to a museum and you saw, I mean, they were masters, just like... Mm-hmm. The ones we can name that happen to be men. And did you even know that there were female Renaissance master painters?
No.
See? They have been doing things since the beginning of time. We still to this day make a conscientious effort to not include their efforts in our histories. We don't teach our children about this.
Well, we are teaching...
We don't just tell them the truth, that women have been doing great things always.
Well, and now there's a big brawl on about the cave paintings in southern France.
Because a woman might have done them?
Women, because it has a feel of something womanly in the paintings. It's not all lopping off some dead animal's head or something. And, of course, it's women who are studying this and then reporting it, and it looks like maybe a fair amount of it, maybe a majority of it, maybe all of it was done by women, and somebody along the line assumed that men did it because men do it. And that was in National Geographic, which is hardly a radical magazine.
Well, I had a really good history teacher that did say to me, well, who do you think invented telling time? Because when we have these conversations, it's always talking about great men and what men have done. And she just said, who do you think needed to keep track of how many days were in a month? And it was like, well, yeah, I suppose you're right. It really seems logical that a woman started doing that first.
Yeah.
So, when you have somebody who's willing to teach from the perspective that maybe a woman contributed to something at some point, it kind of to me, it was an awakening moment to realize that I had even been thinking in terms of, oh, well, all these things that men have done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that kind of leads into the sexist language that we use. And while I recognize Martin Luther King was just a marvelous person, whenever I hear his speeches that just talk about man, it's like, well, why couldn't he have said man and woman, or humankind, or, I mean, again, I just like to have the word man and woman included. Or, as I often say, we could drop the word man and just use woman, because woman includes man at the end. Man is in woman. So instead of man being the general word used to depict humankind, both genders, just use woman and see how men would tolerate that. They wouldn't tolerate it for a moment.
Well, there are some native peoples. I think there's even some American indigenous people who don't have a he, she. They just have a people thing.
Mm-hmm. But and also the early feminists, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, they studied with the Seneca women in New York for the model, as I understand, for feminism, because
yes,
they had a matriarchal society.
They had a matriarchal society, and it was ruled by a group of elderly women, and no war could be fought until those women had given the okay. Then they send out the war chief. But the men don't make the decision to fight. The women make the fight decision. And then the men go do the thing, which I find to be very interesting.
Well, we were talking about violence earlier before the show started. And Amy, for example, Amy, tell the story about watching the cartoon with your son.
Oh, yeah. So a couple days ago, I was watching the Cartoon Network with my son, who is not quite three. And the premise of one of these cartoons during the daytime, this wasn't the adult cartoons that play in the evening, was this, I suppose it was supposed to be a teenage boy, I'm not really sure, they were animals, but the whole premise was he was trying to find a date with a chick, and it was all chick this, chick that, you're afraid to talk to chicks, chicks are scary, chicks like to see chick flicks, and it was just, This is aimed at maybe 9-year-olds. There were so many things wrong with it. The way that they spoke about women, the way that they basically said, well, you're not going to like anything that a woman likes, and you're just going to have to accept it, which I feel was implying, you know, something more than just dating, that they would put up with things that they don't like to impress a woman or something, and I just, it makes me really annoyed. I mean, they're basically telling boys, you need to lie to a woman about who you are to attract them over there, and then work all that stuff out later. It just seems like the root of a lot of problems between men and women being played out in this cartoon, telling kids, don't be yourself. Little boys, don't be yourself around women. Just assume that they like this and this and this, and don't be yourself around them. It was just, I was appalled to have my son watching it.
Plus, you know, the stereotype of chick flick is probably a comedy, a romantic comedy, and that this men would not find this appealing, but they have to go to them to appease the woman. And there were some other people in the studio when we were having this conversation, and turned to blow 'em up movies, and Amy says she loves those kinds of movies, and
absolutely
I have to admit,
absolutely adore them.
I had a crush on Bruce Willis many years ago, and I did enjoy Die Hard, but I haven't seen any more of them. Die Hard what? 2, 3, 4, and 5?
Die Hard 20 came out last year or something like that. Yeah. I don't know how many it was.
So I only saw Die Hard 1, and maybe I'll go back and re-examine those. But I say those movies are desensitizing us to violence and war and what we're seeing on television. Oh, my God, the gore on television is just beyond belief. And the outright sexual conversations and bodily functions and, you know, seeing someone sitting on a toilet on television is just beyond the pale. Who can imagine that?
It seems like every movie has a sitting on a toilet scene. You're right. That bothers me so much. I can't stand it. I know that Carol's going to disagree with me, but I would rather see something blow up.
Well, you do have a valid point there. Yes, I would be for voting against yes. Well, let's just forget about the potty. But here's a thing. Probably one of the most important social authors ever was Charles Dickens. And then too we have Wuthering Heights. Some of that, those books, from the 1800s, are very hard to read. The things that those people went through, and if you read Wuthering Heights, and then you know that you have lost one of the world's finest ever author, because her house lived down the hill from the graveyard where her father was the priest. And 4 or 5 of that family died early because of tuberculosis. And we didn't know about all of the hygiene things and, you know, being downstairs, just down the hill from a graveyard is probably not a good way to have good health.
Well,
and they died so young.
The water drain off? You mean the water running down?
The rain washed down. And I was young and in my teens when I read those books, and I thought, why did they all die? Because, you know, you're born after 1950 here, you've got a good survival chance. And I was just horrified. And then after I was horrified, I thought, why didn't I know that some of the best and also most difficult books in the English language, and I didn't know that. Hmm. Was it because they were women? I don't know. I just couldn't believe that I got to my age rereading those novels over and over and so unhappy that they died. I thought, why did they die? And here it is. It's a cleanliness or an environmental. But well, those women were not reading nice, sweet, kind, romantic books. They are hard to read, yet they are difficult, and hard things happened, and it's just amazing that they don't seem to show up the way, well, Dickens, I guess. Of course, he wrote far more, and I'm off track here a little bit, but, you know, the hard things, like the fact that those women worked during the war for a penny a day for 12 hours every day.
Well, Carol, you made a comment to me on the phone the other day when I called you about coming on the show today that things were tougher now for women than they were when if we agree or disagree that the Second wave of the feminist movement was in the 70s with the Betty Friedan and oh my gosh, Gloria Steinem, and that things are harder now for women than they were in the 70s.
That is true, I think, definitely for the lower class. Probably not much at all for very wealthy women.
Yeah, but it does seem like for those who have made it up to the level of CEO,
yeah,
there are more women getting into positions like that.
But still very few in the whole percentage of
in
males.
In the percentage, absolutely, but it's still improving in that sector. But the
Very slowly.
But it's regressing.
Yeah,
at
now
a tremendous
it is.
Rate well, in the lower income parts of our society.
Well, I believe actually that haven't we regressed in Congress?
Yes.
And I'm not sure if we've gained some in the Senate, but I thought we had regressed in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly,
well, and we've got some serious problems with work. You know, I watched it in Springfield. And welfare to work, which I find to be the single most obscene phrase in the English language. We take poor women and we send them off in the morning to, McDonald's, leaving their children at home, not able to fix their breakfast. They go to school and get a sort of breakfast, and mom goes back home because they want to make sure that she doesn't have 8 hours. That would be terrible. She might get benefits. And again at night, and mom is not home. And then they yell about women, or especially lower class, poorer women, aren't taking care of their kids. Well, you know, somebody needs to tell Bill Clinton that you cannot be in your house and at McDonald's at the same time, even if you are really, really smart and can run fast. And of course, they didn't get benefits because they didn't work an 8-hour shift.
Or a 40-hour week,
and
I think.
And a 40-hour, yeah.
Is it and 32 hours, maybe, you have to work to get benefits, or 30? I'm not sure.
And we're
and it
still
depends
fighting
on
that battle.
On whether you have over 50 employees, too. Maybe there's an HR person out there listening who can straighten this out.
Yeah.
Well, well, different companies have different standards, and they will, some of them will put full-time at, like, 36 hours so that they can give benefits without having to pay them more, and some people will just cut part time and
And I wanted something that just really griped me that this week. Recently there was a woman in Kansas City who went to work and left her small child in charge of a boyfriend who was at her home, a caregiver. He was his charge to take care of the child. The child wandered off because he fell asleep. They find the child. They take the child away from the mother. But this week on the news, a woman in Montana, a homemaker, I presume, a full-time homemaker's child wandered off into the wilderness, just desolate, vast wasteland, happened to have a big dog with him. I think he was missing for something like maybe 24 hours before they found him. He was gone a while. And then that made national news, all heroic. They didn't rip that child away from that mother. A wild beast might have gotten that child. Who knows? A mountain lion. But there was no repercussion to her. And I'm just wondering if the difference was because she was white and the woman who's went to work and left her child in the care of a boyfriend was black. I mean, you tell me, what's the difference? Why do we have this double standard? This was just horrible. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yes.
Am I making a point?
Yes.
There's
yes.
something wrong. I just don't get the tell me what that word is I'm looking for. Hypocrisy? There's something
not
wrong.
Quite right. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, from welfare to work has a nice ring. And then you can blame the mothers. Yet again, I'm so tired of men, particularly. Can I say something? I better not. No.
Well, go ahead. Not. As long as it doesn't have a bad word in it, say
okay.
It.
I'm getting really tired of white men complaining about women in positions of poverty. I just, you know, from welfare to work.
I thought you were going to say women in positions of power. I don't think they like them in power or in poverty.
Well, that's true. That's true. You are correct. But I think that welfare to work, it has a nice ring. I'll give it that. It's, you know, a nice little piece of English. But where did anybody think those kids were going to be? And how come people complain that women weren't in their home taking care of their kids? Well, I know some really smart women, but I don't think any one of them can be at McDonald's and in their house at the same time. I think some of them have tried, but I just don't think it works particularly well.
Now, that TANF program, I recall going to D.C. and meeting with Senator Pat Roberts and being so impressed about how nice he was. I was just stunned how nice he was and could not believe that he could stand so opposite from my viewpoints, being such a nice man as he is. But then maybe that's because he's a politician and he's trained to be nice. He was very nice. He poured me coffee. He didn't have his secretary pour me coffee. He poured me coffee. Really nice. And just still, you know, didn't do anything to help women. Now, was that TANF program, were they supposed to provide child care for these mothers so they could go to work? Was there anything like that involved in TANF? Or how did they think mothers are going to work without child care?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Do they even not know what it costs to take care of a child in today's child care market? Amy, you can probably weigh in on that. What's child care today?
Crossing your fingers that you have family members that are available.
Oh, that's child care?
Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise,
well, they
what's
say
it cost?
In Kansas, it costs more than college tuition.
What?
Yeah.
How many dollars a week?
I can't afford child care. I don't have my child in child care.
No, tuition. Let me think. If I can think right. Okay,
but
tuition
they're looking
is about
$20,000 a year.
What?
For child care.
What?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. For one child? Can't you get a child taken care of for $300 or $400 a week?
That
would be more than college tuition, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I was having child care, it was $15 a week.
That was reasonable.
Well, now I look back on it, and I thought it was a lot of money. Of course, I was making $100 a week.
Well, what I don't understand is the necessity of taking the mother, and then the father, or whomever else, out of the home. There are countries that fund federally babysitters and
workplaces that,
yeah,
that
and
have
workplaces,
provide child care.
But, you know, maybe I'm just old-fashioned, but I really think babies should be at home for quite a while.
Well, and that was also what you said, and I disagreed with you on that. You said the government is making women work. Now, I think maybe you meant the single moms that mm-hmm. have to, but a whole lot of the population have to work now, married couples.
Okay, but the way they handle it in Sweden and other places is that when the baby is born, the mother stays home at federal on federal payroll and takes care of the child.
Mother or son, father in some of these countries.
Well, in some of them, it can be 2 years for mom, followed by one for dad, followed by one for grandma in some cases, and then four-year-olds go to kindergarten type situation. And that is a federal government program, and mom can work and know that baby is safe, and daddy gets real acquainted with his child, which is a very important thing, incredibly important thing. And grandma, because there's going to be times when grandma, you know, helps in, especially if we have another birth, and we got grandma in the picture. And I would much rather have my tax money go to paying for grandma and dad and mom than, you know, another war.
Well, in
I'm
the
real
60s,
adamant about that.
I was able to stay home with my daughter for about 4 years, as I recall. What year was she born? No, a good 3 years before I put her into the child care situation with a neighbor who had two little girls her age. And like I said, the $15 a week is 15% of my income. So if we talk about how much would a woman have to make now for, it's $400 a week for child care, isn't it?
It can be.
Or $300?
Yeah.
So, jeepers, for it to be 15% of your income at my God.
Yeah.
You'd have to make a whole hell of a lot of money. You have to be making $2,000 a week.
And the minimum wage is
I worked at some retail jobs in college that were paying over minimum wage, and I wasn't getting paid as much as child care costs weekly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I love the Scandinavian thing. You stay with mom, you stay with dad, you stay with grandma and gramp. I think that's lovely. I think it's just absolutely charming and lovely.
But they complain, other people say, yeah, but they have high taxes. And taxes.
But they get a lot for their
for
taxes.
It.
We
right.
get we nothing. Pay a lot of taxes and we get nothing.
Nothing with a capital N.
Oh, wait a minute. We must get something. Let's think about this. What do we get for tax dollars? We
the
get
Department
federal
of
highways.
War.
Well,
defense.
We get war. We get the Department of Defense. We get
well, you say highways, but look at the condition that most of them are in.
Well, I know.
We're not really tending to that responsibility.
No, we aren't.
We have the public services like the police and fire department, but they
those
have...
Those are locally funded.
Yes, but we do pay those taxes.
Yeah.
Well, that's
we
true.
Can't even afford to pay the places, you know, we built that wonderful highway system. Thank you, President Eisenhower. That was wonderful. We have the best highways there for a while. And we had those wonderful places where you could pull off and rest stops and have, you know, a drink of water and let Johnny run a little bit. And now they're closing them down because they can't man them and they're not safe.
Staff them. How dare staff you them. Say that word?
Well, because I think in the case of this, it is, would have to be...
No, women could do that kind of work, too. And here's the other deal. That goes back to the gender language, the whole thing. We've got to stop using words that mean males. We've got to think in a neutral language.
I love you. You're such a marvelous person. Well, we have been having a little discussion about this. We don't quite agree.
I've noticed. You have ideas about what jobs women can and cannot do and whether women can and cannot be aggressive. And
yeah,
you,
she does. She
I
does.
Do.
I agree. What was it you said to me earlier that, oh, I know one of the things she says. She has a daughter, a niece, who's getting a business degree and one who is getting a degree in architecture, and she just thinks the business degree is just a waste of that child's education. And I'm like, hello, I think a business degree pretty much is going to cover her pretty well. She's learning management. She's learning math. She's learning economics.
In theory, we will see how it works out.
Well, and you know, the architecture.
And I don't have any qualms with her because she's a girl. I am concerned about she didn't know what she wanted. She still doesn't. And all of the people at the university she chose to go to said, well, go to business, you'll be fine.
Well, I'm seeing job postings that will specifically say business degree preferred.
Mm-hmm.
And when it wouldn't have said that maybe 20 years ago, it would have just been degree preferred.
When I enrolled at Longview in 1970, I enrolled in business. And, of course, that's why I'm so staunchly defensive of business. And I was, like, in a class. There were two women out of 20. We were 10% of the class, and now I'm betting that we're well over 50%
of
the class.
I think so.
Just as in law school and medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And something else I heard on KKFI this last week was that two persons in a family having to work, since 1990, our pay scale, our salaries have increased 0.2%. We've just almost virtually gone backward. Well, in fact, I don't even know if that's...
I think we are going backwards.
If that covers inflation, if that's inflation adjusted or not, probably not. While in other countries, they've gone up 20% in some other countries. And, of course, they started from practically zero, so 20% may not mean that much, but at least there's been an increase.
You know what else is really horrible?
What?
We got to take a break.
Oh. Did you bring chocolate?
No.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. Each Sunday at 10 a.m., the forum will feature a discussion on community issues. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org.
Well, but we are back after that brief announcement. And what just wanted to remind you that the call-in number is 816-931-5534. We will be gentle if we call in. I don't promise that, but normally we are. But we've covered a
wide variety of topics. And it seems to me that some of these topics you can't talk about one without the other. They just all run into one big, giant, overarching problem.
And which brings me to how can you discuss anything without being political? Because it's all about the politics and the corruption in our politics.
We have to revolt against this Emily Post character.
Exactly.
We do.
I think her son's taken over now.
Well,
there's a whole bunch of
people. You know, I honestly do not feel that I can say that I live in a democracy. When fewer than 50% vote, and there's a whole bunch in there that aren't allowed to vote, how does this come out as a democracy? I thought a democracy was like a majority, you know? We're at 47-48% participation.
Lower than that in specific in certain areas.
And, you know, I'm kind of getting there. It's like, okay, these are my candidates. Oh, how nice for us all. And then,
go ahead.
Well, I think it's
bitter.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know.
Say it. Fracking.
Oh, it seems that Senator, what's her name?
McCaskill.
Oh, McCaskill. Yeah. Thinks that the fracking out in Kansas is okay. I cannot understand a woman who has that kind of feelings for the earth and the animals and the people that live there. I know her not at all well. I think very highly of her, but...
Or you used to think highly of her.
Yeah, I just do not... I cannot understand, and I also believe, and I'm sure that there are many wonderful men out there who would wish to pull me by my ear or tweak my nose, but I think that care of the earth is a major consideration for women, perhaps more so than men.
Well, but, I mean, how much money, how much of a political ad were you able to pay for out of pocket?
Are you kidding?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have this situation where we're relying more and more on advertising to tell us who to vote for. And advertising is expensive. It's expensive for the spot. It's expensive for the writers, it's expensive for the actors and the producers and all of the people involved in it.
And generally is full of misinformation.
Well, sure, they're propagandists is what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, if you don't have that, you cannot win.
That is very true. And the other side of it is that money decides. I mean, if somebody can run 50 spots on TV and the other one can only run 3, who do you think's going to win?
But how do we overcome it when fracking makes a lot of money?
And I think the unions are supporting it. Yeah, I mean, jobs.
Some unions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The unions that it provides jobs for, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what... In Kansas, we're a... air quotes, right-to-work state anyway. I mean, half those people probably aren't union to begin with.
Yeah, and the other thing, see, we're back to my thing about history. In the 1880s on through about the 1920s, the most rabid, wild politicians on the social side was Kansas.
Oh.
They had parties and parties and parties, and women ran, and
mm-hmm.
Oh my God, it is a free-for-all. Reading early Kansas history will absolutely have you rolling on the floor. Women ran.
Mm-hmm.
They managed campaigns. We are talking 1880 or 70 through 1920.
And
they traveled alone. And they, it's just, where?
Yeah,
where
there was a woman mayor, I believe.
Yeah,
and,
where did they tear out the pages in my history book
know.
Is what I would like
Round Pakistan. But you mentioned that they changed it in England so that candidates could only run 90 days before.
I don't know what the day is, but they're very short. They're about 3 or 4 months. And they are totally federally funded, and you can have X number of advertisements or speak to the people on TV, and
puts everyone on a level playing
puts on
field.
A level playing field, and you
and it might give you a productive Congress, because instead of running all the time and raising money all the time, they could be doing something. Some of our biggest waste in this country is the money we're paying to our politicians who do nothing but stall. They haven't done anything for us since Obama was elected.
And the other thing is that there are no, what do they call those things, the real fast, short ads. Oh, there's a word for them. And I don't watch TV, so I don't remember.
I have no idea which.
They're just a real, you must know, you watch TV.
No.
There's a little short blurb. It's like a blurb, a very, very short ad for a politician. And it's, I think, less than a minute.
Well, I'd hope that all ads would be less than a minute.
Anyway, I don't remember what they are because I don't watch TV. But they're very short, and it's just a real quick, you know. But, and there is a word for that. But anyway, the politicians here have to run, really, for 2 years. If you're in the House, You're gonna run every day of your life. There's no way around it, both at the state level and at the federal level. With the senator, you get a little bit of a break, but you've got to come up with millions and millions and millions. Mm-hmm. And think what we could do with that money.
Mm-hmm.
I want
going to the TV stations, which are owned by five corporations right now own most of our media.
I would dump election ads in favor of having a wonderful train system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would really like to have some nice trains to ride in. And I really am not in favor of political advertising below the time of 60 seconds. How can somebody think that they're going to look at me and say in 60 minutes something that's going to make me vote for this person? When pigs can fly.
Well, most ads that I hear are why you shouldn't vote for the other person anyway.
Well, that's true.
Because they don't have anything to stand on except what stand against the other person.
Well, if you say what you actually believe, there will be people who disagree with you automatically. And the first rule of politics is to be agreeable to everyone.
So you have to speak out of both sides of your mouth. You know, I love that quote by Lily Tomlin. We were going to work that in, and then we sort of neglected to do that. I know you can do that by heart.
You know, we can just share it for fun.
Okay, let's
share
it.
Okay, let's do that. Lily Tomlin, reality is a crutch for people who can't cope with drugs. There you go.
And this is kind of our reality now, the political system we have, and we've got to figure out how to change our political system so that there can be democracy. We're just kidding ourselves. We don't have...
Oh, it's not even remotely democratic.
Yeah.
Not
yeah, we've been kidding ourselves for a long time.
Yeah, I did an interview with somebody from Great Britain when I lived in California, and I went down to the train to see the candidate come in, just because I do that stuff. And this guy comes up, and I'm standing there leaning, look like, what am I doing here, you know? And he said, can I talk to you for a minute? And I said, are you from England? And he said, yeah. And he said, can you tell me what's going on here? And I said, you've followed him clear across the continent, right? And he says, yeah, it doesn't make much sense, does it? And I said, no, it doesn't make much sense. And he said, well, are you going to do any? Are you going to vote because of stuff like this? And I said, of course not. And he said, why do they do it? I said, well, I guess I just really don't know either. And so he was telling me they get to have, you know, a certain amount and how it's handled and all of this. And he says, well, do you believe what he says? And I said, no. And he said, does anybody else? And I said, oh, somebody might. And he said, well, what am I going to report back? And I said, you could start with Looney Tunes. And he looked at me and he said, you're the most honest American I've ever seen.
And on that note, stay tuned for Urban Connections, and guess who's coming to Kansas City?